Hello, friends. Hello, 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 friends.
A tradition unlike any other.
Oh, 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 my goodness. In your life have you seen anything like that?
There it is! Adam Scott, a life changer.
Mashed potato!
Here it comes.
When it comes to footwear on the course, our friends at Cobra Puma Golf are without peer, and they've certainly taken comfort to another level with the new Alpha Cat Nitros. The Alpha Cat Nitros continue to raise the bar in spikeless golf shoe technology, creating a fashion-forward design with exceptional cushioning through its innovative nitro foam material. As worn on tour by our man David Michaluzzi, the Alpha Cat Nitros provide structure and support during both the swing and while walking, with its alpha traction sole worthy of a wide variety of turf and weather conditions. And true to form for all Puma kicks, a unique form stripe external heel counter looks cool and wherever the shoes are worn. The Alpha Cat Nitro shoes are available in 6 different colors in the laced model and 4 colors in the disc model. So for more information on the Nitros or to take a look at these for yourself, visit www.cobragolf.com.
This is the 19th Tee podcast, proudly presented by Cobra Puma Golf. Kieran Marsh with you this evening with a bit of a pep in his step. It's been a little while between drinks, but I'm very, very pleased to say that I am again, and for the first time in 2024, joined by my good friend, Nathan Drewster.
So, hello, mate.
Nice. I'm so excited I've combined your first name and your nickname. What a start. What an ominous start for 2024. But that's how jacked I am that you're back. Welcome, mate. It's good to have you back.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. It's nice to be back. It has been a little while since I was actually sitting here recording an episode. I can't remember the last episode I recorded. Credit to you for picking up the slack while I was off on father duties, welcoming our little girl into the world. You managed to keep the show completely on the rails as I knew you would do, and some great chats which have been well supported over the Christmas break. But we are back. I'm full of perspective. I know that would have been one of your questions. But here we are. We've the Aussie Tour's back, TPS Murray River this week, plenty happening in the world of golf, and albeit this is going to be a brief episode, there's plenty to get stuck into. So excited to be back, mate.
There certainly is, and we will in just a moment start with the return of the PGA Tour of the Challenger. Let's give the sponsors their due, the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia on the weekend, the Heritage Classic, but we shouldn't skip over it. How is life as a new father? How is young Pippa? I think we said at the time we are a mere 17 or 18 years away from LPGA Tour qualifying school. A lot of water under the bridge between now and then, but, you know, 4 or 5 weeks in, mate, how are you finding it? It is a momentous occasion in your life, and I think I speak on behalf of the entire 19th Tee family to say that we're all incredibly proud and happy for yourself and Amy, and I know it's been a wonderful ride so far, but how is life as a new dad?
It's good. I've never watched more minutes of the Pat McAfee show in my life, KM. It's on it. I think it's 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. I've watched a lot of Pat McAfee show. And
I don't know if that's a good thing, if I'm honest, but
look, I don't know where you sit with Pat McAfee. I actually really like him. I think he is a breath of fresh air in what is a stuffy ESPN setup, and he's excellent on College Game Day. But all in all, it's been wonderful, mate. It's been nice to be home, obviously, as you know, a few challenges early on, but it's been nice to be home and start to get into a routine. First day back at work today, Marshy, which I must say was fucking shit to go back to work. Can't lie about that. I mean, it was lovely to be back and see all my colleagues who I do actually enjoy working with, and they bought us a beautiful gift and all that. But after having 6 weeks off, I tell you what, you don't really want to get back into the swing of things too quickly, but it's going great. And as I say, full of perspective, and you're going to hear all of that perspective come out on the 19th Tee podcast this year.
It'll be easy, yeah. Look, mate, I think it's hard to return to work, period, in January. I think most people feel pretty rubbish in the first day back of a new year, but couple that in with the return from parental leave and the general fog that is the first 4 to 6 weeks, particularly if your first child, it for me ranked in the podium of most unproductive working weeks of my professional career. So you've got that to look ahead of you in the next 4 days, as I'm sure today was an inauspicious start to what will be an unproductive week. Certainly wasn't an unproductive weekend. How's that for a segue? For Matty Griffin, Drewster.
Yes.
Down at the Heritage Golf and Country Club in Victoria, the Heritage Classic, that tournament in and of itself making a return after a hiatus on tour, which was good to see us get back to that corner of the country. Matty Griffin, the Victorian, opening round 61, 11 under 61 to break the course record. And it was really smooth sailing from that point forward. He went wire to wire, backed that 61 up with a 65 and back-to-back 69s to finish at 24 under, 6 strokes clear of his next closest competitor to sew up what in the end looked like a relatively comfortable victory.
Yeah, certainly, Marshy. I mean, didn't catch a great deal of this tournament. I'll mention that straight up front. And I did turn it on and saw that the gap in scoring and the low number of scoring, which is not a discredit to Matty Griffin, but it didn't interest me greatly to turn on and see 24 under par and the next player 6 or 7 shots back. But that just means that Matt Griffin was flying ahead of everyone. Four bogeys for the whole week will win you most golf tournaments. That stretch, I mean, what I will mention is Thursday's back nine stretch of 8 birdies in a row to birdie holes 10 through 17 is truly incredible. And yeah, I mean, had a 28 on the back nine of the first round of a tournament is sensational golf. And as we were talking, you know, I'll set you up for the alley-oop here, but, you know, as we were talking before about essentially how we get enamored with these young players coming through, obviously Matty Griffin, you know, an elder statesman has come out on top, and we do often forget about that. So I'll hand the reins back to you, who came up with that eloquent point.
Oh, look, as is often the case, we spend all our good stuff in the pre-chat before we hit the record button, Druids. But I believe what I was saying to you at the time, and I'd encourage people who have not yet listened, long-time listeners of this podcast would have heard the conversation that you had with Matt Griffin. I unfortunately missed that one and was devastated to do so as a fellow Melbourne Demons supporter, but I would encourage you to go back and revisit it, because you're right in the sense of we'll be the first to admit and put up our hands to say that we are overly at times romanticized by this next wave of talent. And it's easy to do so here in this country, Druids. We have a phenomenal crop of both male and female golfers coming through, whether you talk about the current superstars, I mean, dominated by the siblings of Minwoo and Minji Lee, but you've, of course, got people like Grace Kim, people like Hannah Green, people like Steph Kiriakou on the women's side. You know, over on the men's, you've got Lucas Herbert doing great things around the world, Cam Davis doing great things around the world. That next generation coming up through, Jasper Stubbs is on his way to Augusta this year. Mick is doing, you know, wonderful things. Hayden Barron, you know, making his waves over in Europe. It's easy to get focused on those guys because they're the types of talent you feel like you can invest the next decade in on the international stage. What this win for me was from Matty Griffin was a timely and really pleasant reminder that guys of that cohort who have probably single-handedly propped up the week to week of this tour for the last 10 to 15 years can still match it with this next generation of talent. You know, Mick is sitting there in fourth position. This is a guy who won the Order of Merit last year, who's right there again this year, playing his debut season on the DP World Tour. He's no mug, Mika, and we love the man. Matty Griffin got the job done over a player like that this weekend. So I was really pleased to watch him. He's a journeyman. He's a grinder, Matty Griffin. His best golf is clearly good enough to match it. Sure, the course was, I mean, 11 under was out there on the first day, so it was receptive. You know, there was buddies there if you wanted to find them, but I don't know. I think it was heartwarming in a sense to see a guy like that still have it and still lift it at the end. And we've seen, you know, a smattering of those on occasion. Pikey comes to mind, you know, in the NT and also in the Hunter last year. And sometimes I watch those and they just hold a little bit of a special place for me because we never want to see those guys get forgotten. And whilst we get terribly excited by what's to come, it is always pleasant to remind ourselves of what we've been fortunate to have for the past 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, spot on. And to double down on your point, I mean, Jason Norris was at 700 in the first round. I think he was in the lead. Norrie. He was in the clubhouse, I think, at 700 before Matt Griffin had even teed off. Obviously, you know, finished in a tie for 27th, so didn't have the best finish to these tournament. But, you know, these elder statesmen of the tour, they're certainly throwing it up and matching it with the young guys coming through. So very well put, KM. Probably just another couple that I might just skim over very quickly, as you mentioned.
Please.
Kevin Wan at 17 under was very impressive. Yes. All four rounds under par. You mentioned Dave Micheluzzi, who just continues to produce consistent golf. I mean, another top five finish for Mika. And similarly for Josh Greer, who, you know, is a young West Australian who has really just is making every post a winner in his debut season on the tour as a pro, finishing in a tie for fifth. There are a few others there, but like Jared Felton with a nice little return to form and Gailey and a couple of others rounding out sort of the top 10 or 11 finishes. But they were really my standouts from, I guess, scorecard watching for the week as opposed to tuning in on the television.
Just wanted to rewind a touch. You mentioned the stretch on the second nine on Thursday from Matty Griffin. Was it eight consecutive birdies, you said? Yeah. So that piqued my interest, and I just dug back through the emails. People who were tuned in just prior to Christmas would have heard the chat that I had with Matty Green from Green Form Golf. It was a bit of our kind of a review of the first half of the season. I know you were, of all the conversations that you did miss in a beautiful part of your life, that might have been the one night that you were twinged with a little bit of sadness because we got deep in the data. And we will have Matty back at the back end of the season to review it as a whole. But most consecutive birdies so far, or at least prior to the Heritage Classic this season, there was a group of seven players all equal with five. So Matty Griffin's absolutely smashed that with eight. It's the best consecutive run of birdies comfortably so far this season. So there is that. Another piece I wanted to pick out again from the scorecard itself, the young man who finished in a tie for second, Quinn Croker, the amateur out of Royal Queensland, is putting together, Druids, an absolute season. And I'll mention it not only because he's come for a tie for a second, but in the context of that conversation we did have with Matt Green prior to Christmas, because I did ask him to pick out a few names of people to watch out for in the second half of the season based on the numbers projected from the first. And Quinn Croker was certainly a name on that list that he said. So that break has certainly done him no harm in terms of his progression. And he is having, honestly, an outstanding season. When I look through some of the numbers here that we discussed with Matty Green, Quinn Croker had the lowest average finishing position from a minimum of four events in the first half of the season at 9.5. So, you know, an average finishing position inside the top 10 has only been boosted by a T2 finish. And he's a kid certainly on the rise. So one we want to absolutely keep an eye on moving forward. He had the best strokes gained per round from a minimum of four events in the first half of the season. So I'd be honestly shocked based on these numbers and based on the fact that he's had 4 weeks off and he's come back and finished in a tie for second in his first tournament in the second half of the season, if he is not holding a trophy above his head at some stage between now and the end of March, early April.
Yeah. Played the par fives really well, 11 under, which was equal with Matty Griffin. I think Mika was 12 under when I was just having a quick look before, but bullied the par fives. Spot on.
That's probably it for me from the Heritage. Druids, I don't know if you got anything else there. Before we have a look at what's on this week, I also just wanted to make a quick mention of the WPGA Tour, Druids. So WPGA was meant to commence their second half of their season the week had just gone with the Drummond Golf WPGA Melbourne International at the La Trobe Golf Course. And obviously there's been a torrential amount of rain, Druids, in Victoria. Parts of the Yarra River breaking their banks areas. I saw the Kew Golf Club was one of the places got absolutely inundated with water. So unfortunately, the actual event, the four-day Melbourne International WPGA event, was cancelled due to the weather. But this is a congratulations to Emma Ash, who went on to win what was a revised event on Sunday afternoon, but B, probably more a shout out to the course in La Trobe, and also particularly the tour, to make lemonade out of what was a complete lemon situation. It would have been probably far easier to throw your hands in the air and say, look, it's terribly unfortunate, but an act of nature here has forced our hand and there's no golf to be played.
Mm.
But with a quality field, an international field on hand in Melbourne, they went out of their way to make an exhibition event, similar for those who've tuned into what the Athena has been in previous summers with the women, which we'll see again this summer, which is an excellent event. It's not 72-hole stroke play, but it is entertaining.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to shout that out. Obviously, as I said, not least of which Emma Ash, who went on to win the exhibition event, but to the tour itself for having the foresight to make something out of the situation with those players on hand. So I just wanted to call that out, as I thought it was worth a mention.
No, absolutely right. I mean, we're very quick to criticise, and you know, when literally making hay while the sun is shining might be the greatest oxymoron of all time for that, to get together an event very quickly and rapidly, and to use a very overused term in the last 2 or 3 years, pivot into a into an interesting format event. They've done very well there, so credit to them.
Looking ahead to this week, Druids, chronologically, we should start with the event that's kicking off tomorrow. So we're recording Monday evening here, kicking off Tuesday at the Yarra Yarra and Keysborough clubs on the Melbourne Sandbelt. It's the Australian Amateur. It's got a storied history, this event, doesn't it, Druids? Particularly in recent years, we've seen some names that have gone on to have half-decent careers already. Have lifted this famous trophy above their head, but it's happening across the Yarra Yarra and Keysborough clubs. 312 players in the field. Great to see it on the Sandbelt. It's been some great courses, not least of which Royal Queensland in recent years, but it is good to see it. We kind of saw the beauty of the Sandbelt and the amateur game with the Asia Pacific Amateur there earlier in the year, which Jasper Stubbs won and booked his ticket to the Open Championship in the Masters this year. But the Ozam heading back to two great courses, particularly Yarra Yarra down there, will be an excellent watch. More than 80 internationals in the field. The name that I'd suggest we'll all be watching is Phoenix Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
He won the Australian Master of the Amateurs the weekend just gone, but also has had a win so far this PGA Tour of Australasia season, winning the Queensland PGA at Nudgee late last year. So Phoenix Campbell is the one to watch probably from an Australian perspective. But as I said, 312 players in the field, in excess of 80 internationals, two great Sandbelt courses in Yarra Yarra and Keysborough. I'd urge you, if you get the opportunity, what we saw at Royal Melbourne for the Asia Pacific Amateur and your ability to get that close to some of the best young players, not only in the country but in the world, is a rare opportunity. So if you're down in the Melbourne area across the next couple of days, get yourself out to Yarra Yarra and or Keysborough, because there'll be some great golf on show for, you know, a great experience up close.
Yes, I think also as well, it's worth mentioning that there will be some live broadcast of this via the SEN app /SEN TV. If you'd like to tune in, I believe you've got to download the app, I assume, from the App Store.
Yes, you do.
You'll be able
easy to, though. It's a good app.
Yeah, you can kind of tune into it. It's what I'm reading on the website here. So no, very much looking forward to this. It's a storied event. We've spoken to players who have played very well in this event, and it's certainly a great stepping stone to big and great things in the golfing world, particularly from an Aussie perspective. KM.
Yeah, a couple others in the field. I mean, Campbell has the course knowledge. Mm-hmm. Being a member there and having won on the PGA Tour of Australasia so far, as I said. He also hit the course record 63 at the Sandbelt Invitational just prior to Christmas as well. But his Quinn Croker's in the field, who we've literally just spoken about. Jasper Stubbs is also in the field, who won the Asia Pacific Amateur Another young Yarra player by the name of Max Mooring, highly touted young amateur on the women's side as well, Drusa, former Capera Bowl champion, Justice Bozio, who's been runner-up in the last 2 years, and South Australian Caitlin Pearce, two best credentialed Australian women's players, and wouldn't be surprised at all if this may well be Justice Bozio's last Aussie amateur. She's right on the precipice of turning pro, so she's a great shout on the women's side as well, which would be good to watch.
Just if people aren't aware of some of the winners of this event,
yeah,
if I may just
worth running it back.
I was just recapping there while you were talking. Steph Kiriakou from the women's side of things, Janeth Wong, who we know is a genuine talent. On the men's side, Brendan Jones, 1999. I mean, there's the list is very impressive if you do go back and scroll through it. None probably perhaps bigger than Jason Day in 2006. I mean, a very young looking Jason Day in the photo as well. I mean, if we come a little bit more recent, Mark Anderson, 2009. Nathan Holman, people may remember that name. Zach Murray, good friend of this show, 2015. Aaron Wise, of course, a PGA Tour member now out of the great school at the University of Oregon. Charlie Dan, our good friend David Michaluzzi, Sahith Theegala, maybe one of the biggest names to actually win this in the modern times that people would know. Lucas Michelle, Harrison Crowe, Phoenix Campbell. I mean, there's some pretty impressive names on this list. So looking forward to another exciting installment.
One thing I will say, which will be interesting, we're given a lot of compliments and it deserves it. It's a phenomenal tournament, but there's been a little bit of criticism I've read in parts about the format. So it's 72 holes, stroke play. Traditionally, there has been a match play element. Famously, this course, the last time it hosted the Australian Amateur 2017, I believe Matias Sanchez beat none other than Minwoo Lee in a 36-hole match play event. So the purists among us probably crying out for the match play format to be retained, particularly in its traditional sense here in an amateur tournament. There is some suggestion that the stroke play, and I can see both sides of the argument, is a push from the high performance element of Golf Australia, because these are players who, the majority of them, will make that leap, into being professional players. So this is, a lot of them will be in current high performance programs at, state academies, be it the, VIS, NSWIS, QAS, WACE. They'll be also, academy supported athletes who want to look to make that next jump. And I can imagine the high performance department of Golf Australia, your bread and butter as a pro is 72 hole stroke play events. So the more of the practice you can get in that format, the better. I can understand that side of the argument, but it is a little disappointing that, at least maybe the last round is not a match play format. I don't know how you do it, because it's very confusing in the past, particularly the events we've seen in the States that try to be the hybrid of both in the PGA Tour, but it's got a very proud history in the match play format. It's a little disappointing not to see that get rolled out or at least adapted as part of the event this week.
Certainly. All righty. What else you got? What's on the agenda?
Well, chronologically again, we've got the one of our favourites, Cobram Baroga. The old course at Cobram Baroga gets the nod for what is, I think, an event close to many, many players' hearts on this tour annually now for a few years, is the WebEx Players Series Murray River in honour of Jared Lyle. Not least of which is a significant event because it's played in Jared Lyle's honour. It's a significant event because you'll remember Hannah Green at this very tournament became the first woman in the world to win a mixed male-female event in professional golf just a few years ago. Sarah Jane Smith is the defending champion of this event. And it's always well contested, but it's a special week on the golfing calendar, Drewster, when we get to remember, not that we ever forget. We always have the yellow day at the Australian PGA, traditionally the Saturday. And it's wonderful to have a tournament named in his honour from his part of the world. But as I said, a special 4 days down there at Cobram Brew. You're going to do it in Jared's honour.
Yeah, really good. Really good event. And I think, as you said, very popular. The installment, I guess, of the TPS, the WebEx Players Series, as it is now formally known, and another good field assembled. I think, as you mentioned, defending champ Sarah Jane Smith in the field, Cassie Porter, Brianna Gill, Momoko Kobori from the female side, as I'm running through, Kelsey Bennett. On the men's side, I mean, a lot of winners from this year, Griffin, Mountcastle, Batista, Eccles, Hawks, Gale, Dobler, Aaron Wilkin, Dean Lawson, Braden Becker, Jay McKenzie, Aaron Pike, plenty of big names in this field. And yeah, I think, you know, we obviously get into a run now of the Players Series events.
We're in the Victorian swing.
Yes.
Is what we like to call it. We have the West Australian swing. This is undoubtedly the Victorian swing because we go from, I mean, obviously we have had the Heritage Classic. We're in Cobram Brew this week in the Murray. We go to Jeff Ogilvie's WebEx Players event.
Yep.
And then we have the Vic Open in the first week of February. So we're in the Victorian swing. No doubt about it.
Yes. And then a handful more before we get to New Zealand. So, no, a very good event. Looking forward to it. I don't know if you've done any research for a selection for this week. If not, that is totally okay. We've flying by the seat of our pants here, so that's okay if you've not. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. I think it's a really popular one on the series. And I will also just give a nice little nod. I'm fairly certain that this was intentional, that the yellow is used for this version of the logo in honor of Jared Lyle. I'm going to be fairly certain that that was done intentionally because all the other TPS events have their own colors. Associated, and this one's yellow, so I think that's nice.
Well said. I am going to give you a winner.
Okay.
And I've not put a great deal of thought or research into this.
Shock.
Other than it's a vibes pick, the feeling. Scrolling through the list of names, this is a guy who we haven't seen a great deal of in the first half of the domestic season, which is unusual. But it's been because he's been traveling, try to sell up a bit of status on other tours. He did so on the Asian tour via I suppose what you call the playoffs and the Asian development tour. Himself and Dane Lawson soaked up a bit of status for next season, and that's Aaron Wilkin.
Okay.
So I think the only time he's had max three starts. He had a start at the Australian PGA. He didn't defend his title at the Queensland PGA last year, and that's because he was overseas. But coming off a bit of confidence in terms of securing some status on the Asian tour this year, I think Silky, as he's going by these days, is going to come back and have a good outing. So, really, when I'm nominating a winner, I'm hoping they land somewhere in the top five.
Yes.
That'd be a crow for me. So, Aaron Wilkin to finish 5-1, somewhere in that range.
I think let's go with make the cut to begin with, because based on where we've been previously, it hasn't been great. I'm going with Matias Sanchez. I wrote down before we started.
Yep.
Came back post Christmas break and had a T18 finish at the Heritage. Started the season, as most people remember, with a T3 at the NT PGA Championship. And then was pretty lean in between. Their best finish was a T29 over here in WA. Withdrew from a couple of events. Believe he was ill around the time of the Aussie PGA, had to pull out of that and probably didn't put his best foot forward in a few events. But having a look at the stats, T18 was enough for me to jump on board Matias Sanchez here. He's 24th on tour for average birdies per round. He's T16 for tour average versus par. T24 for total below par. So there's some numbers there that I quite like the look of. So I'll have Matias Sanchez this week.
And as we've mentioned, this mixed event has produced multiple female winners. So keep your eye on Sarah Jane Smith, the defending champion, Cassie Porter, Kelsey Bennett, decent lineup, Momoko Kobori. Yep. Kobori twin, siblings, sorry, actually in this field, Kazuma on the male side as well. So I think there'll be quality golf coming up the stretch. A lot of international women in this field as well, off the back of the Melbourne International that had the hybrid Sunday event, as we mentioned, in the capital. So, yeah, it's a quality female field as well heading into this weekend. We'll wrap up the results on Monday evening, Drew. Just briefly before we have a quick look at what else happened over the weekend, just a mention of the order of merit as it stands now. It's actually fascinating because if you look, as you know, top three, not otherwise exempt.
Yes.
Take cards for the following DP World Tour season. So obviously Mika won last year. He's only just started on DP World Tour full-time this year. But the order of merit as it stands, Minwoo Lee tops it, obviously exempt. Mika is second, exempt. Benny Eccles, therefore, would take the presumptive top spot.
Yes.
Sitting outright third. Adam Scott, exempt. Mark Leishman, doesn't matter because he's not allowed to start under the current agreement as a live player on the DP World Tour. So therefore, Jack Carter in sixth place and Lachlan Barker in seventh place would be your other two card holders, where they'd be awarded today. So that's actually really interesting given there's a large number of players, not surprising given the amount of points awarded to those two major tournaments in the Australian PGA and Australian Open that they all come home to play. But it'll be interesting to see how the cards fall from here because you've got quite bunched, if I'm honest, from six really down to 10 that Matty Griffin's made a jump now after that one at the Heritage. You've got Jack Carter, Lachlan Barker, Austin Batiste, Kerry Mountcastle and Matty Griffin all quite close together, six through 10 at the moment. And of course, you win a tournament and it's anyone's game. Coming home. That'll be really interesting to watch as it relates to DP World Tour status for the following season.
Yeah, totally agree. And there's some big points up for grabs as well in the next. I know we've had two big events, but there's some big points coming up as well.
Yes.
So, worth noting.
So, Druids, around the world, this week coming, the final stage of the 2024 Asian Tour qualifying school. There is a ton of Australians at the Springfield Royal Country Club. I might get you to look up where that is.
Okay. Because
it could be, I don't want to presume. Asia is a big part of the world. So
give me a country where you think it is. Springfield Royal Country Club.
Yeah. Look, I'd suggest, I mean, it's Asian Tour, right? So you're looking at Singapore.
Don't overthink it.
You're looking at Vietnam. You're looking at Thailand.
I think it's in
that triangular. I'm going to say Thailand.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. That has to be one of the two. One of the three, sorry. So there's a bunch of Australians here. Andre Lordy, Kyle Mikkel, Loza Flynn, James Mee, Jordan Zunick, Nathan Barbieri, William Briaris. I've heard of William before. Shea Wills Cobb is over there. Mav Ancliffe is over at Springfield. Jake Hughes is there. Lachlan Barker is there, who we've just spoken about. Peter Wilson.
Yes.
Willie is over there. Nick Vogt, the Kiwi. And then you've got Max Charles, the amateur. Douglas Klein is over there. I wish they had a filter that you could do on this entries list for just nominating Australians. Sam Brazel is over there, Druids. The Wiz, Justin Warren, is over at Springfield. Is that all she wrote? No. A couple down the bottom. Harrison Crowe, Jeffrey Guan. There you go. That's interesting. Denzel Aramaya, not an Aussie, but an honorary
Kiwi,
one.
But on the tour.
Yeah, on the tour. So, yeah. Bunch of guys
there you go
playing there. So you've got a 219 entrants. I believe 35 is what is the magic number. Top 35 is the magic number. So we'll keep you abreast of those results again, particularly those long list of Australians taking part in that. In other results, Drews, we spend very little time on this. Grayson Murray won the Sony Open at the Wailai Country Club. He beat Keegan Bradley and good friend of this podcast, Ben Ahn, in the first playoff hole.
Yes.
Ben Ahn and Keegan Bradley bogey the first playoff hole. Par. It's the par 5/18. Grayson Murray takes the birdie. I don't want to get too deep on Grayson Murray because I think he's a just a bad human personally, but that's neither here nor there. People will tell you he's had a lot of adversity and, you know, he's 8 months sober and he had a terrible, I think it was scooter accident or moped accident, and he's 40s way back from that. Yeah, he also, you know, supported the January 6th incursion of the Capitol and has had some questionable dealings with underage women. So there's that too, you know, and yeah, we don't need to get too deep on Grayson Murray. I will say for Ben Arn, we mentioned it in passing like 6 months ago, and I kind of feel like I got swept completely under the rug. He's just come back from a doping ban. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
There was some sort of kind of like a warny diuretic situation, I think. Or it's like a cold medicine that he didn't realize was on the list and was on the list, and he was treating, you know, a really bad flu. Anyway, he's back. That's good. Love to see Ben Arn. And he stormed up the leaderboard in the back nine at Wailea to get himself into a playoff. Interesting permutations too, as it relates to, this is an Olympic year, which we need to keep in the back of our mind as it relates to the PGA Tour, because you're going to have a lot of guys jostling for spots in the Olympic team. Ben Arn shot up the rankings as a result of this. So obviously hotly contested the South Korean spots between Tom Kim and Sung Jae-im and Siwoo Kim. But Benny Arn put himself in the conversation there as well. So didn't have many thoughts beyond that from the PGA Tour perspective. I love that course. I think it's like 65 years now that that tournament's been running. Somewhere in the vicinity of six decades. So it's phenomenal tenure and longevity given the turnover on PGA Tour tournaments. And I think it's grossly underrated. I unpopular opinion, it's my favorite of the two Hawaiian stops. Kapalua, I think, gets a lot of plaudits and it's a beautiful course, but I just love the humble nature of the Wailea Country Club for the Sony Open.
I love 18 at Kapalua. I think that's one of the best finishing holes on the PGA Tour. But you're probably right. I did actually catch a bit of this up, but you know, again, during the wee hours of the morning, the wind was up and blowing around and it was gusty, and the course looked very soft and receptive, and I think that was maybe reflected in some of the scoring, but also the wind posed a fair few challenges for players. So it was I didn't consume this tournament in its entirety, and nor did I really care, but it was interesting to watch a couple of players go round in the wee hours of the morning, as I mentioned.
Over on the DP World Tour, the season got underway at the Dubai Invitational.
Yes.
The season got underway, in fact, at the Royal Queensland Golf Club, the Australian PGA, back in November. The year 2024 got underway at the Dubai Invitational. Tommy Fleetwood.
Yep.
Birdie 17, birdies 18 to win by one stroke over Rory McIlroy, who for all intents and purposes looked like he was running away with the tournament until the back nine, which included a three putt from 2 feet on 14 and bombing his tee shot on 18 into the water left, which all but sewed up a win, or at least put it on a silver platter for Tommy Fleetwood to birdie that 18th there at the Dubai Creek Resort. So the headline is Tommy Fleetwood winning again in a serious tournament on DP World Tour, but the byline is will be Rory laying a bit of an egg on that back nine, Dreds.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people were quite happy to see that, but based on how Rory has maybe put himself out there in the last little while, but it's been a big 2 to 3 years for Rory, and I don't think this one 15-minute stretch is going to define him too much. He had a 3-putt from 2 foot, which also wasn't a good look. I think he dropped a shot there, but
he did.
I think the big story really needs to be Tommy Fleetwood here. I think, and again, I think he is one of those people. Got to be very careful where I put this because I don't want to alienate myself. He is one of those guys who is incredibly likable, who perhaps hasn't lived up to how much his potential is. And I think we often forget that sometimes when we talk about Tommy Fleetwood. I love him personally. He's probably in my top five favorite golfers. But sometimes I have to check myself that I think this is his 7th win or something like that, KM. So it's not like he's a perennial winner and a perennial player.
It's worth pointing out that they've also all been on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, and that's also been a criticism of him, right? He hasn't won in the US. So
I think you can afford to be stronger because I have a similar affection for him. I love him. I think it's why people became so enamored by his run at the Open Championship last year, ultimately for it to be very disappointing in the final round. And Brian Harman, bless his cotton socks, to be a woefully unpopular winner because there's just nothing there to invest in other than, you know, duck hunting. But he, I don't think he hasn't perhaps underperformed. He's definitely underperformed to his potential. He's never won on the PGA Tour. And that's a criticism against him. But I think what you'll find is he's an eminently likable human being. He loves playing the game. And that's evident when he does. He's had some mind-boggling performances in arguably golf's greatest cauldron, and that's the Ryder Cup. And I think the myth around him has grown as a result of his performances in that arena, and so much so that we get confused as to why that doesn't translate to playing at majors, where he's had a number of top five finishes, some top three finishes, never a win. Why it doesn't translate weekend on the PGA Tour, where he's never won. The two aren't mutually exclusive. We can absolutely love him and say he has not reached anywhere near, I don't think, his full potential as a result, in terms of results.
There are a few Aussies in the field, I believe. KM, do you have the leaderboard in front of you?
I do. I'm struggling to find. I mean, Foxy, Ryan Fox, obviously an honorary Australian.
Was there an Australian? Was there Aussies in the field, or am I getting confused with Daniel Hillier, Asian tour?
Was also in the field sometimes. Confused, but it was a invitation only. So
shut up,
mate. Can I just so it's okay. That's fine. You haven't had much sleep, mate. We get it. That's a play on. There's only 60 players in the field. There's two Kiwis, no Australians. A couple of things I just want to mention. Don't want to brush past what was an eminently relatable moment.
Yeah,
Roy's three putt from 2 feet on 14. One of the great things we love about this game is that every so often, and it's increasingly like Haley's comment on the professional tour, who averaged, you know, 350 yards off the tee and, you know, less than 5 feet of proximity to the hole from 150 yards in approach, and you know, make percentage of 40% from 15 feet and all those things. Every once in a while, we'll get a moment like that where someone of Rory's quality and caliber, three putts from 2 feet. As if to underscore that, I stumbled across this from James Colgan, a golf journo and statistician on Twitter. Rory, in 2023, went 632 from 634 putts from inside 3 feet. His make percentage inside 3 feet for the entirety of last year was 99.68%. He missed 2 putts for the entire year inside 3 feet last year. He missed 2 on 1 hole on January 14th of 2024.
Yeah, huge.
And then the other thing I wanted to point out, Tommy Fleetwood Druids won the tournament at 19 under. Dead last. Gentleman from the States, it looks like. Yes, Ken Wayand. Wayand.
Yes. Yep.
What do you reckon Ken finished at, if you had to guess, given that Tommy won the tournament at 19 under?
Oh, what would you expect? Maybe, he played 2 rounds, obviously missed the cut. Or was it a no-cut event?
No-cut event. Played
okay,
all four.
So 4 rounds, maybe, say, give me like 27.
Compounding interest.
27 to 29 over.
53 over. He had a 15 over in round 4.
Okay. So he was a sponsor's invite.
You'd have to think.
I did see there's been a bit of uproar around this. He was actually a sponsor's invite into the field, and clearly whoever's made the decision has just plonked their mate in. I didn't know it was that bad. Because that is, that's not a good look. Not a good look for anyone involved.
So some quick fire internet research, courtesy of an article on golf.com. He's actually the pro. This is an even worse look.
Okay.
He's the pro at Michael Jordan's Grove Club.
Okay. There you go.
Grove 23. That's Michael Jordan's super private club in Florida. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And he's the pro there.
There you go.
So, amazing. I mean, I don't know if I'd be getting lessons off the bloke who's gone. I mean, sure, like these are the best of the best, but it's 53 over through 4 holes.
Yeah, it's not great. Sorry.
That's a real bad look.
It's not great. Real
bad look. Anyway, that's I just thought it was worth pointing out. That's an incredible spread. Don't see that very often.
It is.
Don't see that very often at all. Look, mate.
What else you got?
I'll probably just turn it over to you in the sense of it's been a lot happening. Been on in golf since we last spoke. I mean, you kind of alluded to it there with what you said about Rory. There's been a bit of controversy around him in the last week or so because he's, I suppose, been or had the forethought to make a comment that he was likely too harsh in retrospect and the people who went over to live in first and that a combined tour is the way forward and that the people in charge, namely Jay Monahan and Yasiel Ramon, need to find a way to bring the parties to the table and come up with a solution.
Yep.
Now, you know, God forbid someone changes their mind with the benefit of more information and less emotion and taking a step back from the policy board and not being at the front line. God forbid he have the ability to soften his stance, but he's copped a lot of criticism for that.
Yep.
It's come in the same week where he's been on the front foot about his desire for a world tour. He mentioned in passing the Australian Open as a potential fifth major. At least that's how some players on the tour view the, you know, the quality of golf down in Australia from a fan's perspective to a course's perspective. So he's got some thoughts on a world tour. Seems like a year ago that John Rahm left for LIV, but that's happened in the times since we last spoke. So just a bit on, mate. Like, there's a bit going on the game at a macro level. Just interested in your thoughts from an outside observer coming back into the fold after, you know, a couple of weeks.
It's funny because there's been a lot, but there's not been a lot at the same time. Yeah, like, you know, I love Rory's comments there. And I think, you know, my position around LIV that we've kind of spoken about is I think I've just been worn down by it. Like, I just don't have the energy or the mental capacity to really care that much anymore. So when John Rahm did defect to LIV, I think my feelings were kind of like, okay, cool, whatever. Like, this was bound to happen. It's seemingly a joint venture between the PGA Tour, so it's not as big a jump as it once was. I don't know. It's bizarre. There's so much more still to come on this before we actually get to anything meaningful. Rory's comment around the Aussie Open being the fifth major intrigued me, but at the same time, I was like, if that's the way that it's viewed, why does no one come down and play it then? Like, if that's the way that some people are viewing it out on tour, that the Aussie, like, I get it, it's not for the prize pool that you can get, I don't know, wherever they're playing in December. I don't know if there's any tournaments even on in December, but like, if that's the way that you view it, then come and play for the $2 million prize. Well, if you see it as prestigious. So, yeah, I don't know. There's been a lot happening, but there also hasn't been a lot of action. I mean, Jay Monahan seemingly gone to ground. Haven't heard from him for months.
Nor is Yasiel Ramon, it seems.
Correct.
His first phone call in like 4 months the other day. That's
apparently
unbelievable.
Which I find bullshit. But, I think 2024 is going to be a really I think it's going to be a year of ironing, right? There's going to be a lot of wrinkles to be ironed out between whatever this LIV, PGA, PIF, DP World, Asian Tour combination thing kind of looks like. Does a world tour come of it? What does that all mean? Who knows? I think it's funny when you start like diving into it all, and I was looking at the LIV schedule, which has now got a lot of events on it. I don't know if you've actually looked at the there's a lot of events. So the the adage of wanting to spend more time with family, I think is starting to wear a little thin, on me, because there's a lot of tournaments on there, plus four majors, plus the other events that they get invites into. So yeah, there's been a lot, but not a lot happened. So yeah, I put it down to 2024 being an ironing year. They're going to the dry cleaners and they're going to get everything wrinkled out. And in 2025, the game's going to come out in a nice little plastic bag and a wire coat hanger, and it's going to be ready to rock and roll, and is the way that I'm looking at it. So, but yeah, there's been a lot happen, KM. At the same time, we've also had the summer of cricket on. There's been a lot going on. We've had David Warner's fucking farewell tour going on.
We've also had David Warner, like, 9 days later, landing a helicopter in the middle of the SCG to make a Big Bash game. So
unbelievable.
Is Dave ever really truly gone? I'm not sure.
We had a Sydney test that unbelievably didn't get washed out.
Yes.
There's been heaps. There's been plenty happening. College football, you know, we love that. That's been on. I mean, your Texas Longhorns nearly got to the national championship game.
They did.
Alabama. Yeah, it was inexcusable, KM.
Inexcusable game management in the fourth quarter. And Coach Sark has been given a 4-year contract extension.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Well,
you could get them within a bee's dick of the national, playoff, but. Yeah, it was disappointing to see them playing in the last game of the season.
Yes, there's been plenty happening. There's been plenty happening. Alabama's coach, the greatest of all time, has resigned and retired.
Did I see, was it the guy from
Washington, Kalen DeBoer?
The guy from Washington moves across.
Yes.
The coaching movement in college football has been wild. I mean, the coaching movement at NFL level has been wild in the last couple of days, but let alone the coaching football, the college football coaching movement has been incredible. When I heard some people touting your man, Dan Lanning, could have been off, and that wasn't to be. It is the Washington man. There's a lot of people, I'd suggest, nervous at the moment with shifting sense. I'd say Mike McCarthy of the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
He could be filling one of those college football coaching positions, because he certainly won't be in Dallas next year.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And Michigan, the national champions, their coach, Jim Harbaugh, could be filling one of the NFL positions that comes up. He's been highly touted. I mean, there's many, many, many spots up for grabs, including my Tennessee Titans, who unbelievably fired Mike Vrabel, who was the coach of the year last year, the year before. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. Unbelievable. He was. You don't have to be dead to be stiff, Mike.
And I imagine it would be one of the most highly sought after. He was talked about going into the New England job after Bill Belichick parted ways with the Kraft family there. And Jared Mayo now looks like he's got that job. So Vrabel's been spoken about at a variety of different places.
Yes, you know, it's all happening.
There's a lot going on in the American football world that we love so much. As you say, plenty happening on the home front. We've got the first test against the West Indies, which could be over within 3 days.
One of the great ways to travel.
Yeah, this week. And then up to the Gabatoir, baby. We love a day-night test against the Windies. That'll be fantastic.
One of the great wastes of time. And what I do really love about it as well, Marshy, is that we've got the foresight to put, you know, someone young at the top of the order that will be able to, you know, lead us into the future of opening the batting for the Australian Test team. You know, someone, whether it's, I don't know, someone like a Bancroft or a Renshaw or a Harris, Henry Hunt. I think it's been a great decision to put Steve Smith at one and Cam Green at four. It's bamboozled me. We've gone for 52 minutes. I've just checked my stopwatch. I don't want to go for too much longer here, KM, but that has been one of the most baffling decisions of all time.
If you look at it on paper, you've got arguably our greatest ever test batsman, probably in the conversation, comfortably in the top three we've produced all time, with the numbers to suggest the game's been dwindling and requires a new challenge. And those in the camp of, you know, he gets to choose where he bats because he's the best player we have, would be quite comfortable with his move to the top of the order. You've also got Cameron Green, who's averaging some outstanding numbers, batting a four in Shield cricket for Western Australia. So there's an argument to be made that it's a perfect series because for the most part, I'd say that really anyone travelling here is not what Cameron Green faces at four in Shield cricket, but a team of West Indians, a lot of whom are making their test debuts here, you know, present the perfect fodder for Green to cut his teeth. And they've been desperate to get him back into the team. Desperate.
Yeah.
So the writing was probably on the wall. My concern is what it does for the longevity and future planning of our opening partnership, because Usman Khawaja, for all intents and purposes, probably retires at the back end of a 5-test series against India next summer.
Yeah.
And then Smith maybe goes to the Ashes the following summer, because the presumption, at least it seems from a public perception perspective, is he'll just brain this. And he probably will. Like, he'll probably hunt up against the West Indies and it's his first 100 ages and everyone goes, shit, how good's this? And then if he's lucky, he might get through the first half an hour when the ball's swinging at 15 degrees in New Zealand for 2 tests over there. And once you get through the first half hour over there, it's gravy because the pitch dies. But then we don't play test cricket for 10 months until we've got...
Absurd.
Yeah, until we've got arguably the best country in the world. And by the way, the only country who's beaten us on home soil in recent memory, in India, coming here to play 5 tests. So, I don't know. Like, I'm okay, I suppose, because mainly I can't fucking do anything about it. I'm not George Bailey, I'm not Andrew Dodamad. But I just don't know what it means when those two guys probably retire within a year of each other and you're throwing, I don't know, like Renshaw and fucking Henry Hunt to the Wolves, because clearly Bancroft's like, I imagine what it was like to be, you know, at Chernobyl in the time when that was radioactive. He's untouchable. For some reason, people will not go near him. So as fucked as it is, I think he's not playing test cricket again. And Harris, I've seen enough. Cheers. I don't need to say that again.
Sure.
So, I don't know what it all means. I don't know what it all means, Drew. I'm concerned about the longevity of our opening, because it's going to be great when Marnus is out there at 2 for fuck all moving forward.
Totally. You know? So my point is, and we don't want to turn this into a cricket show, but my point is I'd go one step further and talk about the longevity of the team in totality moving forward to the Ashes, right? Because that's all ultimately I give a shit about. India coming here will be great and sure, I want to win, but... fuck, ultimately, it doesn't actually count for anything. We're looking forward to the Ashes. Out of the current squad that played against Pakistan, there's at least 7 players that may not be in that Ashes side in terms of Warner, Khawaja, potentially Steve Smith, maybe done by that point. You'd suggest Labuschagne would be there. You'd suggest that Head would be there. Marsh. You know, Mitch Marsh is 32.
Yep.
Yeah. All of a sudden, he's 35 by that point. Alex Carey, with all due respect, I really like, but probably not going to be the keeper in a couple of years' time. I think that mantle will go to Josh Inglis. Eventually, he's already cutting his teeth in the one-day side. And then you get into, like, the bowlers, right? And we've got, arguably, statistically, we've got the best 4 bowlers that we've ever had. I'll still take the old quartet.
Statistically, we've got the best 4 bowlers that Test cricket's ever had as a quartet.
But
yeah,
the 3 of the 4 are not going to be there at the next Ashes. Lyon is not going to be there. Hazelwood and Stark will not be there. Pat Cummins, if he stays fit, will be there. And we continue to do nothing to blood new talent here, though.
I think it's
teams that we should be.
And now we're running out of opportunities, because realistically, it was these 2 tests.
Like, yeah,
give them a rest, because you're not going to take 2 tests at home against the West Indies is better than 2 tests away to New Zealand. And then you've got 5 tests against India, and like, you're not throwing anyone out there who's not ready. Look, I think it's a great point. It's an interesting point, because I think that all those players you've just mentioned would, in the back of their mind, have that Ashes as their last hurrah. Whether or not their bodies allow it is one thing. My greater concern is probably the vacuum beyond the 2025 Ashes, 2025-26 Ashes, because I get a sense it'll be like a compounded version of 06-07 when we lost Langer, McGrath.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Warn. Like, I think it'll be like, not Haydos, sorry, Haydos went a little bit after that, but I think it'll be a worse version of that. Because like, we could be staring in the barrel of like five or six guys going after that, and we haven't blooded enough people. So I will say that my favourite line, just finally this week, has undoubtedly been reserved for former Test captain Kim Hughes, who despite there being two other West Australians in the Test team in Adelaide for the Open Test against West Indies, suggested that were Cameron Bancroft from New South Wales, he would have been selected for this Test. So that's comfortably been my favourite line of the week from Big Kim.
Yeah. Bizarre take. It's a very parochial West Australian take, as you'd very well know.
Well, I thought after 3.5 years I spoke Western Australian, but there are still some dialects that confuse me.
Yeah. And that's because
as I said, we've got the number 4 batsman and the number 6 batsman of the team are both proud West Australians.
Yeah. Abba. Anyway, that wraps up the Grade Cricketer for this week. So thanks for tuning in.
Pardon my name check, that I'll get in trouble.
Appreciate everyone. No, this has been good to be back, KM. Plenty of golf, obviously, on the agenda. Plenty of stuff happening around the traps, and been good to chat a bit of cricket and other stuff at the back end here. And I look forward to TPS Murray River this week. Marshy, as I'm sure you do. And
Cobram Baruga, one of the great stops on the calendar. We love it.
It will be. Okay, and anything else, final parting words from you, closing statements from the prosecution?
It's just good to have you back, mate.
Thanks, mate. It's enjoyable to be back.
All right, that'll do us. Keep your head down, swing them straight, enjoy the golf over the weekend. We're back in the news on Monday.